Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. On this episode, we're talking with a good friend of ours, Becky Sarwate.
So Becky works in the marketing communications department at TransUnion and also was an adjunct professor at Northeastern Illinois University, where she had Jack as a student.
She is a really great conversation, a pragmatic conversation, talking about how we need to get out of theory when we're talking about education and start talking about practical ways to use it.
Yeah, and so that's where the conversation kind of strayed. Talked about a little bit about the pandemic, as you do, and sports, and it's a great conversation, so stick around.
Because look at me.
Yeah, right. So we're in conversation with Becky Sorates. Becky, I was going to say her last name again like I did with Matt. So Becky, we usually start off with you introducing yourself and giving kind of a little bit about who you are and what you do.
By day, my name is Becky Sarwate. I've been at TransUnion, which is one of the three major credit reporting agencies in the U.S. and, in fact, in some places around the globe, for 5 years, where I have worn all hats that are possible in marketing and communications. During 4 years of that time, I was an instructor in the English department at Northeastern Illinois University, which is how I became acquainted with one of the hosts of this lovely program, Jack, who was my student at the time. Unfortunately, I'm not currently teaching, not so much because I don't have the time or want to, but it's hard for education now too. So my class is expendable for the moment, but the door's open. And then I was a student myself at Northeastern and got my graduate degree in English literature, which sort of kicked off my nighttime career of being a freelance writer. I have a couple years ago published my first book, which is a nonfiction partnership with another Chicago writer, Randy Richardson, called Cubs Sessions, famous fans of Chicago's Northside baseball team. That was a book that we produced where the proceeds went to charity, and we got to talk to a whole bunch of famous Cub fans across, I would say, demographics, generations, what have you. And then until fairly recently, I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus from some of my other writing endeavors, but I was a regular contributor to Contemptor, which is a liberal political website. I have been a long time Chicago theater critic for a couple of different magazines. But as we discussed before we started rolling here, theater is not having a great time of it in the COVID era. And then I was also a regular contributor to Wrigleyville Nation, the website, but similarly, there's not much to say about baseball right now. So,
well, it's coming
back. It's been
an
interesting year. I have a lot more free time than I've had in previous years, which has been both bad and good. So that's a little about me.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. One of the things that I like that really kind of, one of the reasons why I like taking your class, and then another reason why I think it's interesting, is because you have an English lit degree. And now you're in marketing and communications. I think it's because what we were talking about with one of the podcasts, actually the one that just came out with Mario Vallejo, we were talking about how basically your degree, don't pursue the job your degree was built for, but use your degree in a way where, you know, you can pursue your passion and what you can do with it. So leveraging your degree.
I have
way.
To say, though, when I pursued my degree, unlike my fellow masters in lit students, most of them are going to get their master's for teaching reasons, right? So to be employable as teachers, or because they thought they were going to write the great American novel. I thought neither of those things. I went back specifically to shore up my credentials to re-enter the corporate communications world. My first job out of college was in that sphere. I got laid off after 9/11, and then I found it very difficult even to get back in at some of like the entry-level positions. Because I hadn't in college written for the paper. I didn't have yearbook experience, right? I didn't have any of that stuff. So I had to shore up my like freelance credentials and pursue higher education. So I am the one person who went and got a lit degree for corporate reasons. But that said, right, you know, I'm a practitioner of it, then opened doors for me to do all these other things that I'm passionate about. But I was a little mercenary in terms of my corporate career about it.
So it's the that's the angle of it, is that, you know, very much so when people go to, get a higher education, whether it's a bachelor's, master's degree. I mean, in most cases, if you go get a master's degree, it's because you don't know what the heck you're doing. You got to go and figure something out, and you go back to school, and you're like, oh, maybe. Because in reality, we go to school for 16 years of your life, and up to that point, that's well more than half, maybe three-fourths of your life. And you're like, well, what else is there to do? And I know that I felt the pressure to go back and get an MBA or something like that, because it was like, oh, the only thing that only people that are hiring me is FedEx. Like, where am I supposed to go? How am I supposed to get forward and move forward? But one of the things that Jack talked about a lot about your class, and the reason why, and we've, you know, we've known each other for a little bit now, is because it's like, okay, don't get this degree thinking that it's going to, you know, automatically open up some doors. It does take a lot of work. It takes, you know, and you can apply different things that you learn in different ways, and you kind of opening up people's eyes to the idea that though this is an educational course, this is education never really ends, and it really can open up doors for many different things that you, you know, previously may not even have thought of.
Right. And it's
awesome. I never saw myself writing a book, to be honest. I'm just not a long form writer. Like, mm-hmm. I think of myself as an essayist and a creative nonfiction writer. And I just never saw that, unless someone wanted to read a whole memoir about me, and that's unlikely. I didn't see how that was ever going to translate. But again, to the point you guys are making, you show up in the right places, you do the hard work, you get noticed by the right people, and they start to make you think about things that can expand your skill set and stroke your passions and ego. So,
Right. And it's really because a lot of what, you know, we like, the degree really doesn't mean anything in terms of like what it can do for you. And I think that's it's a different approach to higher education. Cause when your class's name was called Make Your Liberal Arts Degree Work For You, it's like, there's a lot of things that you might not think you can use, but if you look at it, you could say, oh, these are skills that I already have and I can leverage them this way. And it was kind of more of a free form class where you kind of had to focus on your own projects and do your own content. And that's a really big part.
So my last class, which you weren't a part of, was all dudes, seven dudes. And they were the most literal dudes ever. Like, I'd be like, so you remember what the assignments were like. I'd be like, make a video, but make it about something you care about. Mm-hmm. Like, right. I'd be like, this is how long it needs to be. Da, da, da. Use whatever tools you have. Hand raise. Can you be more specific? I mean, I told you to do a video about something you cared about. Right. Like, so like, to your point, I think that's a little scary in higher education settings for some people, because it's supposed to be rigorous and curriculum, right? You're supposed to guide, blah, blah, blah. But what's missing then is teaching people to like learn their own minds. So we have a lot of people who roll out of college and they don't have a clue about who they are or what they want to do. And so this group is the reason
why they were there in the first place.
They're expecting someone to tell them what they are, and they don't.
I was going off the thing. It's like, go find yourself. Go find yourself. And then they come out and they don't even know who they are. Right. So it defeats the purpose.
I actually brought, because it was such a small group, we had more time at the end of the semester. I brought Nikki Neagle back. Remember the public speaking, like empowering, badass, you know, Mohawk lady. She came back and did a workshop with them about learning to think for themselves. And I just like sat there and I was like, have at them, man, because to what you guys are saying, the piece of paper, the degree, that's fine. But I'm 42 almost. No one cares anymore, right? It's just like, what am I still using and building upon from then? And so if you don't even know your own mind, that's going to be a rough go.
It's really important to know what it is you want to do and not think that the degree is going to show you what you want to do.
It's not going to figure your life out for you. That's right. It's a piece of paper. Yeah. That's right.
Because like, Frank, you had your troubles in business school, or well, you not troubles, but like
I barely passed. No, well, I mean,
you passed with like you're in the dean's list. You passed a lot, but there's still a lot of stuff that we're learning right now. That he's like, business school didn't teach me anything.
But it didn't teach it in an applicable way, right? That's what my class was trying to do, was take it out of the academia and the books and be like, hi, when you hit the street, this is what is going to matter. And probably my guess, Frank, is that you found the program dissociated from that.
Right. Well, it really was a teaching somebody the And I can go back to, and I'm going to have to let her know that I keep mentioning her on this podcast too, but one of our buddy's wives, she just got her master's degree from Northeastern in lit something or other. She was talking about the rhetoric class that she was in, where the guy, it was supposed to be angled towards teachers, right? She's a teacher, okay. So she's going and doing that, right? And semantics. And the whole class, she's like, he didn't mention anything about classroom, teaching, nothing for like 10 weeks, right? Yeah. Right. And so he's talking about these integral parts of, you know, like, and it's obvious that the guy's really passionate about it, and that's great. I mean, you could be passionate about semantics. That's great. Go ahead, you know. But she's like, there is no practical aspect to it. And she was at Descartes, or what was that? Yeah. The coffee place. Descartes, yeah. Sorry, I pronounced the ES at the end. but, and she overheard two history teachers, and they were a master of history or whatever. And they were like, I hate how people keep coming back here just so that they can get a higher pay, like so that they can get higher pay at their job, right? That's the only reason why people are getting master's degrees in history. And she's like, that's because you're not teaching anybody how to use it practically. It's like, there's no practical angle
there's
to it.
There's a reason to show up. I did also pursue my degree out of personal passion, right? I just love literature and wanted to do it. But like, if you don't feel strongly enough about a thing like that as it is, and as it is probably has existed in the same form for decades, you know, why else would you show up other than as a means to an end? Totally.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so that was with the business degree, was that, you know, I've written three business plans and all three of them have happened post college. They didn't teach you how to, right now we have a new idea that we're in a tech accelerator for that we're pursuing. And I have to figure out how venture capital and how to raise money using equity, all these terms that, yeah, sure. They floated around while I was walking down the halls, but nobody ever told you like, this is what this is. This is the first step to do this or anything practical to do. Like if you had your own business idea, or anything else. And, you know, just
strategic. Are you guys in like a Shark Tank thing, something like that?
No. It's an accelerator incubator type thing. So it's called Workbox. We're gonna have the CEO on at some point. I mean, he has to now. I paid him. the whole idea is that they help you get your pitch deck and your financial forecasting down, and then they have partnerships with VC companies and everything. So they have the warm introductions, put you in front of them. And, you know, they made a little community full of entrepreneurs. And if you know anything about us, we're expert networkers. So that angle of stuff is, you know, I was like, yeah. And we, yeah,
I did a thumbs up outside
the screen.
Although even networking right now is a little different, but yeah, fair enough.
Well, you know, but
we've been doing pretty good.
Frank's been doing really good on the virtual networking.
Yeah. I mean,
we met a guy from England.
On LinkedIn reached out to me via LinkedIn. He followed me and I was on a kick, still am. If you follow me on LinkedIn, I'm going to reach out and say, hey, thanks for following me. We got on a phone call. He's in London. He introduces us to somebody in New York and he's on the podcast.
Next week.
Yeah, and he's just changing the way deep listening, new analytics of marketing and reapproaching, and it was a great find. And he's a great guy. So, but networking has changed. But as we've been saying, like, it's so easy just to talk to anybody. Like, you know, if we were to schedule this in person, Becky, I mean, how far out would we have had to have pushed it, you know?
Especially with my schedule, right? It was hard even pinning me down for this. Totally.
Right.
And I don't even move around anymore. So, yeah, you're right.
Right, exactly. So it has its benefits that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right, you know, and it's just, I think a lot of it comes down to trying to kind of remold what college and what higher education should be, because I think a lot of people go in there thinking they're a blank slate and then, you know, you're going to fill, but it's like, how am I, it has to come back to being pragmatic. How am I going to use this? How is this going to benefit me? And what do I want to do with this?
Right.
It's not, what is this job training me for? It's, what job am I going to use this for? You know?
And you remember my most like repeated teacher feedback would be like, in the real world, this is a piece of crap, right? Like, right? Because like, don't impress me as a teacher. Like, yeah. If this is like, if I'm giving you a marketing or a messaging assignment and what you've produced is a piece of dunk that can't be used in the real world, then you have failed, right? Like, I don't believe in, I mean, academic exercises is the wrong word for it, but like philosophy, right? This is a real work. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was my number one thing is like, don't just put something on a piece of paper and turn it in. Like, this is for you. It's got to help you. You need to learn this skill. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And that is different than my other class. And for the record, my class was named by the department chair. It would not have been that wordy if it were left up to me. Professors, am I right?
Right. Well, what would it have been called?
Yeah.
I think I would have made it more deliberately like a, and clear that it was about corporate marketing and communications, right? Mm. I guess I like the way he went where it was broader than that because I could see where maybe my title might have made, say, a sociology student think there was nothing in there for them and there was. So I guess I get it, but I'm very direct. So mostly it was like, and you know what? No, I would have called it probably a branding class, like figuring out your brand, not like a marketing branding class, but like, get in touch with who you are and what you want to do now that you've amassed all of these quote unquote skills in college. Mm-hmm. Like, so no one's waiting for you at the other end of the door to tell you what's next. So what is next? Right. Yeah. So maybe I would have made it a little more focused that way.
That goes back to, that brand voice, which we talked to Kelsey Hoff about, and we talked to Josh Greiveldinger about. Josh is an actor out in LA, just moved out there that we know from here. And he's like, listen, when you go on auditions, right, you enter into a room with 20 or 30 other people that look just like you.
Yeah.
That look just like you. Because they're looking for somebody like you. And so how are you going to stand out? And that's that unique voice. That's that voice. And in a branding standpoint, and we could take this on a couple of different routes here, because you could talk about like individual, if you want to get a job at a corporation or a company or anything else like that to make you stand out from, you know, other interviewees. Mm-hmm. But then also we were just talking to Kelsey Hoff about, and she's a blog writer for, you know, solopreneurs, and how that line is blurring between your business, if you're a solopreneur, and your personal life because of how close everything
is. I would even argue in your corporate life, right? So I am the same person that I am at TransUnion, that I am sitting here talking to you. I wear my Black Lives Matter t-shirts. Like, I am not a corporate hack in terms of that. And I think, and I would add that 2020 has accelerated this process, right?
Oh, yeah.
The individual that shows up to work matters as much as the product. And now in a phase where society is hyper attentive to individuality being respected, appreciated, equality, I think I am uniquely positioned to thrive, right? Because now all of a sudden, all the corporate talk is about bringing your authentic self to work. This guy has been doing that since the year 2000, right?
Right, so I think
like, even now, if you are doing a job where someone else pays you your full-time salary, like, personality and like who you are is now going to really factor into the interview process, replacing other crap like race and religion, right? Mm-hmm. It's now going to be like, what's your brand and how does it fit with our brand?
Right.
So even that, I think if I were doing my class now, I would use this year as a case study to be like, look, all of a sudden companies are woke left and right, right?
Yeah,
so now like what you say about yourself matters as much to the corporate hiring process as building your own business obviously does. You guys are synonymous with your brand, right?
Right.
Becky Sorwate is not synonymous with TransUnion, but I definitely bring my authentic self to even my work there. Like I say in my class, if you read a piece of corporate writing or whatever I produce for them, you still know that I wrote it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, now I'm just kind of interested to do you sort of run your department there or you're...
I'm middle management.
Okay.
So I'm like, allegedly I'm two rungs from the chief marketing officer, but that really doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of people that are off. So I'm not obviously entry level. I would be depressed at 42 if that was the case. I also wouldn't say like I have like a budget or like a real like spending say in what happens, but I have a authoritative like vision strategy voice.
Well, I would like to work at your wing, your middle management part of the TransUnion thing, just for a couple of weeks.
My dotted line reports absolutely love me, like because you get the same. Like if there's a bad idea, I'm like, well, that's bullshit and a waste of time. Like I'll say that in a meeting the same way, you know.
Yeah.
So I actually feel like now is a good time for people to be themselves in whatever work they do, maybe even more so than like a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a fight of keeping that kind of stuff separate from, you know, just the old way of doing things. And I guess every generation kind of goes through that, where it's like, you know, these kids got to stop coming in, you know, they have to be dressed correctly. And this goes back to our research with millennials. How long ago? That was like 3 years ago or something like that, when we were doing a lot of research into millennials.
Don't you guys feel old now? Remember like a few years ago when you were all the fresh stuff, and now it's like Generation Z making fun of your Harry Potter and stuff.
I don't pay attention to any of that, but
well, you know what? technically, it depends on who you ask, but I am a Gen Z sometimes, and sometimes I'm a millennial. I'm 25. I think I'm on the edge.
You might be right on the edge. Yeah, you're definitely a millennial, Frank.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even in mind state, he's definitely.
Yeah, some of the Gen Z guys, they think you guys are super uncool. They're not even worried about me.
Like, yeah, right.
They're looking up.
Maybe that was just the whole diabolical plan is to get the, and then we'll pit Gen Z against whoever's coming after that, and it'll just get more and more finite. Like, well, you were born between these 3 years, so then you're not cool, you know. So it'll just get more and more finite. But there was a pressure that was like, you know, from the baby boomers, and I know there's got to be
Gen X. We're such a small actual cohort. We actually are in terms of size that you actually forgot about us, Frank.
So with Gen X and with baby boomers, there was a lot of pressure to be like, hey, you know, you millennials have to wear, you know, have to save up money, or you have to, you know, do things a certain way, come into the office, you can't work from a coffee shop. And now that's starting to open up. Obviously now nobody even goes into work.
Go back to the 90s and rewatch like Kevin Smith movies, revisit the grunge era. My generation, I would argue, is the first one that stopped growing up. Like I'm a 41-year-old child. No one would give me like their baby. Right? So like, I think we started that little, like, we're going to rebel against like the corporate structure. Like we grew our hair, we put on the combat boots, you know, like we wore the black lipstick, we made all the loud, angry rock. And then of course we gave up and did what the baby boomers did. We sold out, we got jobs, we got mortgages, whatever. Right. But I think we started a model that has been built upon by succeeding generations. Yeah. Like we were the original coffee shop generation. So actually I would challenge you into that we thought those jobs were appropriate to this point, right? Like we established a line for it. Mm-hmm. I think your generation, Frank, and wherever you fall, are moving that. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it accelerated it. I mean, I think COVID-19 with all the bad has really brought out a lot of good in that idea that, I mean, it's going to be bad for real estate. I don't know if anybody's really talking about it, but I cannot see if a corporation's running smoothly right now that they would continue to go and waste. I mean, they're always looking to cut down fixed cost, and in fixed cost, the biggest one is rent. And if you could cut that down, be like, you know what, really, we just need a conference room every Friday and we can have everybody come in. I mean,
and you don't even need that.
Right.
Well, TransUnion is a tech company. We don't make anything, right? It's data. So we tried this whole everybody's got to work from home remotely. And lo and behold, like productivity didn't suffer. Like everything's getting done. Yes. So to your point, conversations are already like, we're a long way from a vaccine probably. And even so, even when there is one, do we need to have the same footprint?
Right.
Probably not. Especially if you're a company that's still making a physical product, right? That's different. But for anybody else.
Well, my one friend, he works at TransUnion. He said that they're.
Who that?
He's in the.
Sales support.
He was asking what his name
was. Christian Roman. He's in.
I know him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in the sales enablement area. Yeah. I know him well. Yeah, I do a lot of sales comms and work with him. Good. I will look him up and tell him I know you.
Well, you know what? He said he was kind of interested in marketing. I don't know if that's really what he wants to do, but.
Sales enablement's not that far from marketing. It's basically putting the right sales material in front of the sales rep at the right sales stage, which is like really one-to-one marketing. Here's the thing you need to close that deal. So it's not far. Okay. Anyway, we don't have to go down that road, but tell Christian to connect with me. We can chat.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely tell him. But they said that you're not going back to work until October. Like going
at least.
Into the,
and I would argue that the way the country's going currently with the surge, no.
Yeah. Right.
I will say I'm glad to work for a company and a CEO who really is like, look, I'm not trying to get anybody killed. And such as we're not making a physical product, like we're not going to be the first.
right.
to go back. And I don't know what the exact criteria is, but when you have 49 states, you know, searing the wrong way in cases, that's not going to get us back to the office anytime soon. So,
no.
And I'm okay with that, and also going stir crazy, as are we all.
Well, yes, right. yes,
yeah. It's a, yeah. But I had a different point to make too, okay. and I totally forgot what it was. Along with the fixed cost and the real estate
yeah.
and everything, I was kind of on a train of thought there. But oh well, the good things that have come out of COVID, it's definitely something that you know allows people to have. I mean, I've been talking to people in networking events that are like, you know what? I've connected with probably 30% more people than I would have just normally, you know, day-to-day type stuff, because it's so easy to get on a call and get somebody's attention. And the good networking groups have made that switch.
Yeah.
They've made that switch.
I have found even with friendships, that's interesting, right? Yeah. Like some people I talk to maybe sporadically in the before times, as I'm calling them, like, all of a sudden, like, we're connecting and we're using, like, Marco Polo or these other platforms, and, like, we're in each other's lives probably more.
Right, yeah.
But then again, the friends that I saw maybe, like, once a week where we had, like, a regular lunch or something, we're finding it hard to, like, so what does that look like, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like as business goes, so is personal life going in the COVID area. Like, we're learning new things about ourselves and other people and our friendships and certainly our relationships. I know you guys aren't married, but... there's that. And I think what you're getting at is right. The people who are going to thrive in this area, or the relationships that are going to thrive, might be surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a good point. And I'm going to say that we should restart the clock again as soon as a vaccine is made. Right. So birth of Christ, whatever you, however you want to look at that. BC AD.
Birth of Christ, yeah,
right.
Whatever.
BC AD. Right. And then there should be one whenever a vaccine is made, right? That should start a new AC.
After COVID.
After COVID. Ooh, I like it. After COVID. I was going to go, I was like, BC
honestly,
is already
dude,
made.
Things, so much is going to have changed, and we're all going to be living in this weird way for so long. I've been liking it to like, we're all going to be like weird baby moles, like coming out being like, how do we live now?
Right,
like,
right.
you know, like, I can go out and get food and sit somewhere, you know, like,
even
we
like,
all had like a dissociative fugue, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of it.
It's even weird when we're doing one of our patented Nick Cage marathons.
Nick Cage marathons.
Good choice.
And one time they shook hands, and we're like,
whoa,
why the
no,
hell
like
they
No, like legit, like
was
they were
necessary?
In a hospital, and they weren't wearing masks, and they went to shake hands, and I was like, this is very strange. I'm not comfortable with this.
Was that necessary to shake his hand right there?
And how stupid that is.
I was watching the Cubs scrimmage last night. Did you tune in for any of that?
No.
So it was Hugh Darvish with an amazing wavy afro. It's
I've seen that.
Just for its own, just on its own. Pitching against Kyle Hendricks, right? And so there was like two-sided teams. So when they would make good plays, and Bob and I were like, what? They like kicked ankles.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
That's like the new butt slap handshake thing is an ankle kick. However, right after doing that, Javi Baez like loogied, like right on the ground. And I'm like, my dude, that's not missing the point here. But like, I was like, oh, okay, so that's going to have to happen in, like, sports. They're not high fives and stuff. No. Not going
to
be doing that.
Just to that point about Javi, you know, hacking a loogie on the ground, it's just like Jack when we were on the set for Habitat for Humanity Chicago. He's like, I would be the worst poster boy for this because he has the mask on, right? And then he goes like this and he just like wipes his face his eyes. I'm doing right now.
I'm the worst. Like we were
you're
in a hospital.
Jack, you're like patient zero over here rubbing your face.
Like it was like right when we were doing it, I was like,
and then he put the mask back on.
And I'm like, that totally defeated the purpose.
It's been really hot, though, too. And breathing into your own face when it's also like 90 degrees. I hear you. The struggle's real. We're all
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We just got our, actually, you know what? Yeah. We did just get our Cubs masks.
Yeah. A buddy of ours sent
us. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He bought
are
us.
Are they homemade? Did someone make them?
No, he bought them and then sent them over here.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, though, those were much better. They're like made out of a more breathable material.
Yeah,
so much better.
Yeah, it looks a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I guess it looks a little bit cooler than the
surgical mask.
Well, I ended up turning off the game. Like I watched it for a few minutes, right? Because I was like, baseball, Javi Baez, that's cool. But then I was like, oh, this is kind of sad. like the empty stadium and like, you know, the kicking ankles. I was like, this just isn't.
Were they were pumping in crowd noise too, weren't they?
They were, and they had like sporadic people in the stands that were like working there or whatever, who just like sit down for a few minutes, and they were. And also David Ross was doing like some funny, like when someone would hit a home run, he'd go out and like demand a curtain call and stuff. I mean, it's just not the same. When the Cubs pitching coach is crying because he still can't breathe from his COVID case, it sort of takes the fun out of it. Tommy Hobby, he had it like months ago and he still can't breathe.
Well,
so, they're saying even the asymptomatic people, like they're testing their lungs and it looks like they're inhaling fiberglass.
I honestly still don't see baseball or any sport happening this year. I think we're all kidding ourselves. We're like going to just keep it like that dream alive until the last possible second. But like, what are you going to do? Who is it that I was just asking about? Some big NFL player just tested positive. Like, how are you going to do sports? Mm-hmm. It's all people running into each other and like body fluids. That's all it is.
Yeah, definitely.
And then there's all football. The workers, right? The food workers, the cleanup crews, like all those people. That would be risk. I don't know how you do it. I miss sports. I've been binging on 30 for 30 just to get some of that, but I don't know how you do it.
Well, we just watched Coach Carter with Sam Jackson, and we were getting antsy when they were playing the games. We're like, yeah, come on. And we're
starved. Like the competitive among us, we're hurting.
Yeah. I was watching this one Netflix miniseries called The English Game, and I don't know anything about soccer, but I was getting into this game, and I'm like, yeah, they're going to win. And it's like, damn, I need sports back.
One of my favorite writers, Charles Pierce from Esquire, wrote a piece about like ESPN running like these amateur pole vaulter guys who are obviously really awesome, like doing it in their backyards. And like ESPN was just running that. And he was like, it was fascinating. It was amazing. People are so talented. I couldn't believe the way they soared over their neighbor's house like that. And I was like, man, I wish I'd seen that. You know?
Yeah, right.
So to your point, I think that we're all making, there's a lot of bad about this year, but there's like these kind of awesome, weird, we don't know where it's going, like bursts of creativity. And even though I'm sad for all of these industries that are on their knees, and we've talked about some of them, I hope that there will be like a new playing field for like new ideas.
That's one of the great things about, you know, just the idea of the phoenix that, you know, burns and dies, and then from the ashes comes, you know, a little baby phoenix. But like that's a great aspect of it, is that it's got why, like, you know, it's bailing people out kind of bothers me a little bit, because it's like, you know, not small businesses. I mean, we could bail out small businesses, absolutely, because they really do need the help.
Shake Shack? You didn't feel like Shake Shack?
No, I could care less about United Airlines, man. I could care less. I'm like, you know what, you guys, something better is out there. Because if we continue to, like, this is the only way we can do air travel, all right, then we're never going to come up with anything better.
And then the secondary problem is all of these corporations have had bailouts before. Right. They took that money and they bought back their own stock instead of planning for the future. Now, if you're a regular American, right, and you run out of money, everybody shakes their finger at you because you didn't prepare for the future. So corporations, though, they don't have to.
Right.
So,
you know, corporations have only been humans for what, like the past 8 years? They're still kids.
No, it's been longer than that.
I think it's 2010, right?
They were officially deemed people in 2010. Yeah. I'm going to side with Jack on this one. Yeah, that the Hobby Lobby, the corporations are people.
They're only 10 years old, so they're still children. You can't try them as adults.
All I'm saying is, like, you know, like that aspect of it, it's like, all right, let's invest into these. Like, I would love to see a burst of small business and innovative ideas. And because they, you know, every politician, what do they run on? Small business is the backbone to the American economy. Yeah. But when it comes back down to like, okay, well, let's help those people, they're like, no. You know, and you're like,
if you ever want to have a crazy man come rant for an hour and 15 minutes about trust busting, you can have my husband on your show. Like, that's his like favorite pet crank old man topic. It's like Frank, how we keep bailing out all these behemoth industries that don't work, and it stifles the little guy can never get it. Yeah. Right. And it doesn't make us a better country that way. Yeah.
Right. It's like, hey, let's bring back manufacturing. It's like, manufacturing's gone. Just learn to live like that. It's dead. It's not in America anymore. Like, there are pockets of it, and there are people that are going to be doing manufacturing, but the big manufacturing aspect of America's economy isn't there. Well, stop promising it to people trying to revive it.
But, you know, it is here. Like, we are producing more than we ever had, but a lot of it is now machine labor. It's not human labor. So it's like, even though we're bringing manufacturing job, we're bringing manufacturing back, those jobs aren't coming back, you know?
And also look at COVID right now. Some of the hot spots are manufacturing places, meatpacking places. Like, I think the escalation of robots in factories is a thing that's going to take off that much faster here, because there's actual people getting damaged in these places. So,
Well, that's Andrew Yang's whole thing, too, that's why he wants that universal income.
He was a weird dude, but I liked him, and he had some good ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a smart guy.
I didn't want him to be president, but I thought the race was better for him being in it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think he should be – we should – I definitely –
His verbiage of freedom dividend, I loved it. I thought it was the perfect thing. If you could get some guy in Kentucky, rural Kentucky, go like, yeah, I'll take a freedom dividend.
Yeah. Right.
Done. Because that sounds like something that America would give its citizens, a freedom dividend.
An American flag, or even better, a Confederate flag in Kentucky. Right. And I'm sure I'll take it.
Rather than calling it, you know, socialism or anything else, and that's how all this stuff works, and we can merge back into branding right now.
Language is powerful. I'm with Andrew Yang on that, for sure.
Well, it's the same reason why you have all these poor rural people that don't want to pay the death tax when it was originally the estate tax. It's like, you're never going to have to pay that
tax. Who was that Republican guy? I can't remember. They hired him. He's an absolute genius. Because the way like he tested all these phrases to get people.
Grover Norquist or Karl Rove? Who,
I don't know. But he changed the estate tax to the death tax.
Right. That was all during the Bush administration. And
you're getting taxed for dying, not that you're a wealthy SOB who's passing.
So 900, almost 100% of those people are never going to pay an estate tax unless they win the lottery and then die immediately after, right? That's not how you get the votes. It's all about the way the verbiage. And so the freedom dividend, I was like, yes, oh my God, how great does that sound? That sounds like you can go down to Louisiana and he'd be like, yeah, I want a freedom dividend. And some guy in New York would be like, yeah, I want a freedom dividend. And
I always felt like Yang was coming from the right place, right? Like, he actually cared about people. Like, he's not just some billionaire that's up his own butt, right? He could have just done that. But, you know, he meant well, and I liked it. He had good ideas.
Yeah, and it's about the, you know, it's just about we need to change. I think one of the things he wanted to add into was the Secretary of Technology to the cabinet. Like, it's weird we don't have one.
Did you watch the Congress grill Facebook? It was embarrassing.
It was the funniest thing. They had no idea how he made money.
They don't know what it's even talking about. They don't even know how Facebook works. And it was like, how can we talk about regulating? And it's an important conversation to have, these types of companies, when like you can't find your rear end with both hands. You don't even know what the platform does.
Well, going back to what Frank said, it's not about, because we really don't know how to regulate this. But what we do know how to do is break up Facebook. If you break up Facebook, then you could have another social media site that could say, hey, we don't do this with your data. We don't
take your data. Are you on the side of break up Facebook? Is the Conrad brothers officially on that side?
Okay. I love breaking things up.
Yeah. It shouldn't have been allowed to buy Instagram. The only reason why Facebook
destroys competition, which is the whole.
They pretty much own everything. Instagram and Facebook together. It's like
and
there's only
WhatsApp. Really they own. Right, like, you know, now I'm using WhatsApp, and all of a sudden I'm getting friend suggestions based on my WhatsApp people, and I'm like, okay, why is this happening? It's like it's almost convenient, but then I'm like, there could be something nefarious here.
It's a great of conflict between, you know, people saying that they want, you know, America's capitalism, but then you allow it to not have competition, which is the only way capitalism survives.
That's right. That's not what the free markets, quote unquote, are supposed to be about. That's
exactly.
Right.
So,
you know, break them up. Amazon
needs to be broken up. break it. I'd take a Pixat to it right now and just start.
They interestingly, Amazon failed spectacularly during the mostly national shutdown and lockdown. Like, I don't know how frequently you guys order from Amazon, but my husband and I do groceries and otherwise their supply chain and every other damn thing broke down. So
really,
yeah. I ordered things and it would just say it was undeliverable. And I'm like, you were here yesterday, and like things would get canceled or not arrive or weeks later. They were tested and I believe failed. And I think that opened an opportunity for other vendors. Like all of a sudden you see all these other national chains now really launching like an on-demand next day delivery thing. Cause they're like, okay, Amazon's not perfect. They showed their ass during the pandemic. So now we're going to take chances we might not have taken before they had that public stumble. And I haven't gone back to them for some things, Amazon. I don't care that they have everything on the site. If you can't get it here, you're not doing any favors.
Right.
We talked about
education, which is something that we definitely wanted to touch on, because we have strong opinions about the way that education should look going forward, which is a lot
We haven't talked much about that, but do share, because education is going to have to reinvent. Oh. So what does that look like to you guys?
Yeah.
Well, when we were talking to Mario on the last podcast, we were like, you know, you could spend, and no way does this make you an expert, but you could spend $180 and watch any masterclass episode that you want for a whole year. Right. And so what that allows you to really do, and you're not beholden to, oh, I need to get this many amount of credit hours to get a degree. Right. It's like, oh, well, I'm interested in learning how to cook. So I'm going to watch, you know, Gordon Ramsay. I'm going to watch all these other, you know, things. And then maybe it comes up like, yeah, you know what? I want to start a restaurant. And they have all those things that are readily available.
And it can start
anything you want for $180 a year. You can access the whole library.
Yeah.
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 And this is experts teaching things that
people that you know, right, are experts, that you don't have to go and look up their credentials on a website.
Over 500 different classes.
Yeah.
And they constantly are expanding it. I mean, you know, so those classes won't necessarily make you the expert in any of those fields. But they are
practical, usable knowledge, which going back to our education conversation isn't always the case.
Yeah. And then it could also spark that interest to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go to this because I took Gordon Ramsay's cooking class. I'm going to take this cooking class, you know, this neighborhood cooking class or, you know, like one that's, you know, by my house. I'm going to take this class. I'm going to learn more.
And then it could just expand from there where you can read on stuff and all of a sudden you can become an expert on it. And I think that the reason why Jack and I, like, you know, if we didn't go to college, right, we feel like we would be in the exact same place that we are now, because Jack took that screenwriter's mentorship, right, where now, like, as we mentioned at the beginning, he's a quarterfinalist. He's won some awards. And that cost however much that cost, right? Like,
over a year
of what he spent in college. And now he could be deemed, you know, not an expert, but somebody that can definitely hold their own and somebody that people come to for advice about how to write scripts.
Right.
And then on my angle with the accelerator is to learn about all this stuff that I'm interested in because I want to start my business and these are experts. And it costs, once again, like an eighth of how much I paid for college.
And not only that,
Northeastern as well, Frank, or did you go? Okay.
And not only that, but now you're dealing with lawyers, which you've never had to deal with before.
Sure.
They're a fine lot.
Oh my God. Well, yesterday was just exhausting.
Well, the real way they get you, right, is that they're also writers and communicators, but they specialize in saying a lot of nothing.
Right. Right. Yes. Well, I caught one of them. One of them told me one thing yesterday, and then today another one told me to do another thing. And so I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to talk to somebody else now who, you know, hopefully is going to be in the middle of both of them or maybe leans one way. But the idea that, you know, like you could really become an expert in something, and I think it's going to not trade schools necessarily, but something more along the line of an apprenticeship program, which our dad has advocated. He's like, I don't know why apprenticeships ever left. Because if you're interested in something, it's like you're going to learn. And I know that you've said this too in your class because Jack has told me. It's like you can learn anything of, you know, in a job in 6 weeks, right? You can be like, whatever they need you to know or how to do, you can learn it in 6 weeks. You can go there and you can figure it out. And so the idea is that there's a better way to educating yourself than, you know, being stuck in a math class when you're trying to learn how to write. You know,
TransUnion has a paid internship program. It's not going on this summer, unfortunately, like many things. But they hire so many people out of there, right? And it's not people who learned things that they did in a classroom. It's people they brought into the building for 3 months and taught practical skills and turned them into useful TransUnion employees. So there they go and they become that.
Well, that's what Christian did.
That's exact. Oh, well, there you go.
Right.
I also would argue that's a more equitable way for people of color to get in the door, because people of color are even less able than some of us white folks to amass the college debt necessary to even get that degree. So your dad is totes right. Yeah. There was, like, in their generation, right, there were trade schools. There were places you went to learn a thing and then become an expert in it and get a job. And then later in life, you could revisit other stuff if you wanted. Right. Yeah.
Well, that's like Lane Tech, right? My Lane high Tech, school.
That's what it was founded for. Yeah.
Now they got rid of everything. Like when I was there, I mean, you're mandatory. Like I did drafting, I did AutoCAD, right? And, you know, like it was like, I was like, oh, I'm not really interested. But there are people that find that stuff interesting. There is wood shop, machine shop.
Well, aren't things that can hurt you to know, right? Like you don't maybe want to do them for the rest of your life. But if you like can know your way around a table saw, that's not the worst thing.
Right. And in reality, a lot of people would go there and they'd learn, you know, they'd focus on plumbing or they'd focus on, you know, wood. And then all of a sudden that became their career. They got out and they were able to do something practical and be able to sell themselves and be able to do it. And it's something that it's a gigantic like love story. Everybody's just in love with the idea of getting a college degree. And you're like, you know, there's a lot of pressure, like from our parents to, you got to have your degree and, you know, and you're promised all these things when you graduate and none of them are true. You know, they're just,
so do you guys regret going through the formal degree process? You're coming right up to that line.
Right. I mean, if
I would say that there was definitely a better way and I could have learned everything I did from it. And I think that the Albert Einstein quote, education is what happens after you forget everything.
The value of education is what sticks left after you forget what you
learned. Right. Exactly. You know? And so what I remember most is my business law class. Everything else is just white noise. Like I really can't focus on anything that I was like, oh, that was really that I learned that here. You know, so I would say there would definitely be a better way. I would say that if I have kids, I would definitely push them more towards, hey, what are you interested in? Let's go and talk to some people and see if we can get you in a room and see if that's actually something that you want to do and lay it out in that way and see if there is more of an incubator or more of a, you know, very focused classes that you could take and become an expert in something and explore your interests that way rather than pumping money into a system that's like, oh man, I don't know. Like, you know, it just seems like.
What about you, Jack? Because you were one of my most vexing, but also awesome students in the sense that you were nakedly yourself at all times. So like, no matter what the assignment was, you were like, I'm doing a video. And I'd be like, well, okay, that's not quite what I asked for, but cool, right? Because you know who you are and you know what you want to do. So I don't know if Frank was the same type of student that you were, but I felt like you very much knew who you were. And that was.
Yeah. And I, right. And so, like I said, I'm like, if I was 5 years younger, I think college would definitely not have been something I would have been able to argue my way out of, I think, if I was 5 years younger.
I tried to leave 2 years in.
Right.
And then my uncle told me to stay. So that's why I did.
Right. I think
are you happy that you did it or not happy? Would you go back and do things differently? Like
I would go, because what I got out of the mentor program, which was only like a year, but we split it up into like 2 years, but it was only like 4 years. So I was meeting with her
once. You did that your own way too. See, that's my guy.
once every like 2 weeks, we'd meet on a script and we'd work through it. And I got so, well, I would do that because first of all, it's like, I think Gary Vee said it. It's like, you're not lazy. You just don't want to do it. You know? So in school,
Explain that. You're not lazy. You just don't want to do it.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
So basically what he means by that is like, people are like, oh, why don't I do this? You know, why don't I want to do this? It's like, why haven't I done this? And it's like,
So he's saying the passion's like, not there.
Right. You're just not passionate about it. And that was kind of like how it was with any class that I had. Well, first of all, I hated all my creative writing classes in college because, you had to be a certain level of, they weren't, it wasn't about creative. It was about how many issues could you, or how many stances could you make in your writing piece. It was like, okay. it wasn't about the story. It was about like, oh, this is about this. And I use this criticism to write this thing, which I don't think any creative writer actually thinks goes out thinking to do.
Where that comes in handy for me, again, I describe myself as a creative nonfiction writer. I do harken back to like my schools of philosophy, but in the context of talking about myself. So not like in a piece of literature, right? I'm like, this was very Derridian of me when I did this thing, right? It's all about me. It's not about like taking another piece of literature and diagramming it. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And so I got a lot of like kickback because it was like, it wasn't, there wasn't enough issues with it. Like even when we're doing like, even when we were watching for like short films, or there was this one film and it was about like, and it just had so many different layers to it. It was a woman running for Congress who was a lesbian who had a, well, it was two different races. So it was a, like, mixed race.
She was a biracial lesbian.
Right, biracial lesbian running for Congress who was taking care of her son that had autism.
So you thought too many plot points, like we're just carrying too much here.
It was, tried to spread peanut butter just, around the whole loaf
right,
of
it
bread.
Was just like, you can't touch on any of those things.
You
well.
Can't do justice to any of those topics.
Right. You
like,
can't
right.
do
so
anything.
You're saying that your
that's how creative
writing was yeah, like that.
That's how creative writing classes were. And it was like, got oh, it. You're just talking about like, because one of my scripts was about, well, one of my short stories was about basically a guy in school working at a pool, which I did, and the pool was definitely underfunded, and they were thinking about closing down the school, which almost happened to Northeastern.
It was semi-autobiographical. Okay.
Right. And so I wrote this, and everybody was reading it, and they all were like, she was like, one of the people that commented on it was like, she was a white girl, and she's like, I don't like how it's from a white male perspective. And I'm like, I never said it was white. You're thinking because I'm a
that's interesting.
Writer.
Yeah.
You're thinking because I'm white that, and it was first person that it was a white person. But like, what other perspective could I write that from? Like, from me, be personal about it. And
you could have done a biracial lesbian running for Congress, yes. like her
working yeah, at right. a pool and supporting her autistic son.
But that's how some of those were. Like every one of those, and the teacher was eating those stories up, saying, "Oh, it was really good. I really like how you touched on this subject and that subject." And then with me, it was like, "Why is this guy so jaded? Is it like white male rage? Is that why he's so jaded?" It's like, "No,
you're like, well, I'm feeling some right now."
Right? No, but the we didn't have a roof on the pool.
Right.
It's like there's real issue there, but you know they didn't want to read
that. That sounds pretty first world what you just said there. Yeah. We didn't have a roof on the pool.
Well, it was just tarps, and yeah, it wasn't there. There was
and
stuff
that's
in the
same part
chapter.
Of academia that annoyed me too. That's not practical. Like, what
right.
good is what good is that?
Yeah.
Oh.
But let me tell you, you go up and try to pitch somebody that story, they're going to be like, oh my God, that's way too much. That is just
yeah.
way too much.
You can't.
It's like the Showtime series Boss, which had Kelsey Grammer in it. And it was just this great, like,
he was the mayor of Chicago or something.
Yeah.
Right?
It was a great, like, House of Cards. It was prior to House of Cards. It was a great House of Cards style thing where he's running the entire state, basically.
Didn't he have, like, cancer, too, or something? He was
he
dying.
Had Lewy body dementia. And so it was an aspect to it that didn't need to be there.
Right, because it was already intense.
It was so intense. And then also now he's seeing things. And you're like, okay.
You didn't need to see things.
You didn't need that.
He didn't need that to fail the way that the show wanted him to, like, have certain things go through the cracks. You know, he didn't need that disease for that to happen.
Right.
And for it to be.
Did you guys watch The Watchmen on HBO at all? By any chance?
No.
There's one season, and if you do watch it, think it's similar to what you're saying now. By the last episode, I was throwing up my hands. I was like, why do we need more new plot points at this time? Like, can we just wrap up the things we were dealing with?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so academia can be overstuffed. Like, literature can be overstuffed. It's, I think, partly why I went into my degree saying I'm not going to write the great novel because I associated that with assholery.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, you know,
are we allowed to swear on your podcast?
Yes, it's yes.
Too late. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, too late. I've already done it.
So. Well, no, it's it goes back to the I think this is true of life. If you try to go through life and you want to do something profound, you'll never do something profound.
Mm.
If you think too hard about being profound, right, you get it your own way. Totally.
Yeah, right. You sound stupid. It's
it just becomes generic.
Right. Cliche. It becomes cliche is what it becomes.
I have a friend. We started writing our nonfiction books at the same time about topics in which we were equally knowledgeable. She's not done yet. And I don't know what the problem is, but I think it's a version of what you're getting at, right? She wants to write like the all-encompassing historical record of a thing. And because of that, she's scaring herself into doing nothing at all.
Yeah.
So I think there's the... trying to be all encompassing problem for one, the clutter problem. But then I think there's the problem where it can scare people away from doing anything. And so then so she calls me periodically for advice and I'm like, finish the book, right? Like, what other advice do you want me to give you? Like, I can't help you with this. Like, my book is now for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nate. And my co-writer was a taskmaster even more than me. So that's fine. But like, if you're waiting to write the all-encompassing history of any one thing, then
it's never going to be done unless it ends.
You know, and that's like in the creative space. One of the things that happened was right after I finished my first screenplay, the pilot script that ended up getting into a festival, we were very there was a point where I was like, oh my God, if someone buys this, I'm going to lose it. And then it's like, that's my idea. That's like my idea. That's the greatest thing I've ever come up with.
And then
3 weeks later, I have another idea. And I
and
write
it's
that.
The greatest idea.
And it's like, and then you realize real quick that there is no greatest idea. There is no, if you think you're writing your magnum opus, you're not. It's one of very many things you'll write or one of many things you'll do. There's no.
I think a lot of creatives though don't trust that they will have a next great idea, right? It's like, I have this one. What if there's no more?
I'm tapped out. No one's ever tapped out of creativity. It's a well you can go to for the rest of your life.
Right, and it's just the same thing with the way that I used to look at business ideas too. And we'd come up with a new idea, and it was like, oh, this is going to be great, and we're going to make sure that we never sell it. And we're going to keep running it until we're 85, and I still am a little bit against selling, certain stuff just because, if you're really interested in it, then you don't want to, but
if you're passionate about it, you want to keep doing it.
Right. Exactly. But with the one accelerator program idea thing that we're working on right now, it's like, you can buy it for the 3 P's.
Yeah. Right.
Price. If it matches on all of those, then we'll be good to go. But we were just talking about it just the other day, yesterday, last night. We're just like, Dad goes like, oh, don't forget about this idea. I'm like, I didn't forget about that idea. It's like, we're laying out track work. We're going to be able to move on a whole bunch of every stupid idea that we have.
Yeah.
That is somewhat like, oh, you know what? I don't know if that exists. You can move on it so long as you have that kind of structure in place.
Did your dad have this kind of entrepreneur spirit? Like, what did he do his career?
Well, he was a professional photographer, right, for 45 years now, but he owned his own studio for a while, which was very reflective of the incubators you see now, like the ICNC or Workbox we're at right now, where what the goal was is to host a whole bunch of creative people in the same area working on projects together.
Like a salon type thing?
Yeah, so like they had a music studio, they had photography, they had video, and so that was the basic idea, and they were just a little bit too before their time.
Yeah, it just didn't quite work out. People were more like, why would I rent for a space from you when I could work from home? When now it's
what,
like,
what year
I
is want this?
not work from home, but like if I could if I had my own space where I could be private and everything. Yeah. But
what
that
year
was
this?
Like late 80s.
Oh, yeah, 90s. That was ahead of the like WeWork model.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So, and then, once our sister was born, everything just kind of, it wasn't our fault.
Everything that happened to me too when my sister was born.
Yeah. It just became too much. And then, then he started grooming us to do our own thing.
I got to say, in this pandemic, I look at people who are parents and I'm just like, how?
Yeah.
Like, right. Like keeping myself together, getting my work done, staying motivated. Right. Like if on top of it, I also had to figure out other people. Mm. Bad respect to your dad and like all the parents, like in times good and bad.
Yeah.
Respect. Yeah. Yeah. I think what ends up happening is that you think you have a threshold where you couldn't possibly manage anything more. And then it's put on you. And then you're like, wow, holy cow. I have all these my RPMs go well past 8.
Yeah, right.
It goes well past 8. Like you can handle it, but you have to be forced in that position, right?
Yeah.
If you're forced into it, you're like, I can handle this, which is what I say all the time. I mean, you know, the work that we're doing right now, for a lot of it, like the podcast takes up a lot of our time. But like for everything else, I'm like, you know, like realistically, I'm like, there are days and I'm like, oh man, I'm really running hard, right? I'm really running hot right now. And then I have to think about it. I'm like, you know what though? I'm sure I got another 15 that I could go, you know, mm-hmm. like I know that if it was there, that I'd be able to adjust.
And you guys are physically disciplined too, right? Like you have your workout regimens and stuff that definitely translates to, you know, discipline in other areas and being pushing yourself a little farther.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that voice in your head that, you know, is injured us at certain points. Like, come on, do another squat.
After reaching a high weight that I will not say last June and getting a finger wag from my doctor and like threats with some medication, I was like, yeah, this sedentary life, right? Like I was very disciplined in my work, but not there. And I've been trying to bring the two closer together this year. And oddly enough, I found that finding that physical discipline is also translating into my, I wasn't really undisciplined before. I'm just like, oh, this is different. Like I just feel a little more agile. And to Frank's point, right? When I feel like I got to walk away, I can't look at this thing anymore, whatever it is. I remember like, hey, in that Palm Squad class, when I thought I might die while we were doing water low, I stuck it out so we could do this.
Right.
So I think that's important too. And I think during a pandemic where nobody's leaving home, like just giving in to sedentary is going to be more of a challenge than ever.
Right.
Not for you, for the regular.
There was a time where it was like, a couple months for me where I was just like, well, I'm just going to wait for the gym to open up. And then it doesn't. And then you're like, well, all right, we got to start to figure out some stuff. And, you know, going on bike rides with our mom on Sunday mornings is a lot of fun. You know, so you just kind of, so you just make the stuff
work. You guys, you're like a tandem bike for 3. I want that to be the case. That would be horrible.
You know, tandem bikes are a lot of fun. They might seem a little lame, but they are a lot of fun.
I've never ridden one, but honestly, they look fun. I'm not being facetious.
Like,
they look
fun. It was like 6-7 years ago, me and my, because our neighbors have,
A tandem bike.
And we got that thing up to 40 miles an hour.
Like, like going downhill or like just like flat?
Well, we were going down a hill, but I mean, we had gotten it to like 32 and then we went down the hill. We were 40 miles an hour.
I'm trying to imagine the image of like two young dudes like coming screaming down a hill in a tandem.
It was, I mean, you can get those things real fast, like 3 on a tandem bike. I don't know what's the ratio between too many people on the bike and starts making it go slower.
Oh yeah, right.
But you could get that thing pretty fucking fast.
You be careful out there. You hurt your leg a few years ago. You be careful out there.
Well, no, it's strong now.
Yeah. That's another thing I'm finding in my early 40s and retaking up exercise is that injuries that like long ago stopped hurting. I'm like, oh, there you are.
Yeah.
Like I broke my tailbone in 2012. And after like, I tried to do 3 pom-pom classes in a week. It's really just super fun. Mm. But all the jumping around, like by the 3rd hour, I was like, my tailbone. And I was like, oh, I hadn't even like thought about that. Like, sorry. Old age, man. Get it while you're young. Do it all while you can, guys.
Right. And then you slowly taper off, right? Then you can taper off. And I mean, you don't need to be the, you know, gray hair, gray beard dude that's jacked out of his mind. You know, you don't have to do that.
Colbert's father-in-law, who's in his 90s, can do a 5-minute plank.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey,
that's what, I mean, you know.
I can't do a 5, I don't think I ever could do a 5-minute plank. So, like, respect. Like, and he's an old military guy. So back to that discipline thing, right? Yeah. That's why he's 99, because he's still engaged mentally and physically.
Right.
Well, absolutely. It's like one of my dance professors was talking about how taking dance classes, even like just not for like, I mean, anyone could take a dance class, but what it forces your brain to do is because there's a lot of neurons that are connected in your brain and then they separate. So like if you try to flex your toe and you're in an awkward position, your same hand will start to try to move. And that's because...
Totally. I felt that happen, like the wrong side of my body. And yeah. I'm like, I'm not telling you to do that, man.
But it's like we're trying. And so it's actually rewiring your brain. So
I was watching the Bruce Lee 30 for 30. I didn't know that he was actually like an accomplished ballet dancer on top of everything, which of course makes sense, right? If you're that much of a martial arts badass. But I was like, that's a guy who wasn't afraid to like do a thing in the 50s that seemed not right. the straightest activity, yeah. right? And he's like, right. it's going to make me better at the stuff yeah. I care about. So right. good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're coming up at the end of our time here. So we usually end off, Becky, with some words of wisdom. Anything that we had talked about, which was a huge roller coaster. But
it's all good. That's how I am, a huge roller coaster. It's great. Man, you should title the episode that.
In conversation with the huge roller coaster. Yeah.
The words of wisdom, right? Like all of my creative outlets, like most of them, just kind of flatlined on me, right? It's not my fault theaters are closed, not my fault baseball's not being played. And especially I think when you're not anymore the youngest kid on the block, you start to try to figure out like what's next, and you can almost get discouraged, right? Like someone the other day sent me an email, you guys will know what this means right away, but it had the TL:DR. Have you seen that before? It means too long, don't read. I'm ancient. I didn't know this. I like got defeated, depressed on like a serious level where I was like, I'm just too old to reinvent at this point. Like I should just quit and hang it up. Right. It was a fleeting thought, but I think especially in this year when it feels like everything is working against us, sometimes try not to be the person who works against yourself. I'll leave you with that.
Excellent.
Right. Yeah, right. The whole, I think it's a misnomer when you say, when people say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I think it's not true. I mean, it's like, are you willing to learn? And you should be willing to learn how to change yourself and evolve yourself.
And this situation just calls for it. So we all better be ready and not get in our own way.
Yeah, all right. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Nice to see and talk to you both. And yes, please send me your corporate clips.
Okay. Yes,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll do that.
Bye, my dudes.
Bye. All
right. Bye. Thanks for listening.
For more episodes like the one you just listened to with Becky Sarawate, we recommend our conversations with Matt Fayo and Mario Vallejo.
And as usual, if you haven't heard them yet, our conversation with Jeff Gomez on storytelling and Colleen Fahey on Sonic Branding are definitely conversations you should listen to. We also have a Patreon if you're interested in supporting the podcast, which has exclusive content on it, and you can find that link in the description. Because our podcast is brought to you by listeners like you.
Thank you.
Thank you.